in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Naturopathic Earth. This is A. Gregory Luna. As always, you can call me Gregory. And thank you for joining us in this inaugural podcast of Naturopathic Earth. In each podcast, we're going to talk about a different topic which optimizes your health, whether it be in the realm of nutrition, homeopathy, aromatherapy, mindfulness, general well-being, essential oils, and the like. Because at Naturopathic Earth, we believe that we should exhaust all means to recover or prevent or treat a disease instead of just the allopathic approach, which is the let's treat the symptoms with medications. So the first topic I'm going to cover is the microbiome, because the microbiome has a lot of connections to your health. So please visit us at our website, www.naturopathicearth.com, N-A-T-U-R-O-P-A-T-H-I-C, naturopathicearth.com, where you can review our articles. You could hire me as a health coach if you like, because I have kept my weight off for a quarter of a century. How many trainers have that history? But I do, so I could definitely help you lose weight or just become overall a healthier person. So today we are going to talk about the microbiome. I think most of you have heard the term probiotic or probiotic bacteria. The microbiome is the kingdom, essentially, of where our bacteria and fungus reside. Now, the large majority of our microbiome resides on the skin and in the gut. In the intestines, we have about 20 feet of intestines, small intestines that is, and we have about 5 feet of large intestines. To review the digestive system, going back to anatomy class, the job of the mouth, the oral cavity, and the stomach is to mechanically and chemically break down food to the point where it's essentially like saliva once it gets to the small intestines. The small intestines, as any of you have eaten old school hot dogs or tripas, is tubing, essentially tubing, where our cells called the microvilli suck up and absorb our nutrients. Now, they're able to do this with the help of bacteria and fungus that live in our gut. So the bacteria and the fungus down there essentially assist the microvilli in absorbing our food. All the undigested food matter then passes to the large intestines, where it is made essentially into feces. And then excess water is absorbed by the large intestine back into the body. And then the large intestine will eventually expel it out through the anus. So that's a digestive system 101. So we are literally crawling with bugs, literally. I mean, one of the most astonishing stats is 90% of the cells that are in us and on us are not human. Not human. We are crawling with these things. It's a little discombobulating at first. And just imagine if someone had invented glasses that we could wear in which we could see all the bacteria that's on our body or even around us, you know, and all our furniture and whatnot. I mean, I think literally reproduction would halt, because it'd be pretty disgusting anytime someone opened their mouth and you'd see bacteria and whatnot coming out. Now, the good news is that the large majority of the bacteria and fungus in us and on us does not cause disease. It's not what we call pathogenic. It's actually good bacteria. And we have a symbiotic relationship with this bacteria, which is great. So really from the dawn of time, we've had a very intimate relationship with bacteria. Back in the old days, you know, we would rip out fruits and vegetables from the dirt And we were surrounded by the bacteria that was in the ground. And so it was not, I mean, ideally, of course, you wanted to clean it, but they essentially just brushed it off before they ingested it. And so we had these critters crawl into us. And then throughout the millennia, this exposure to the bacteria did not become abnormal. And it eventually resulted in a nice balance in our skin and in our gut. So these bacteria, a lot of them look like Mike and Ike gummies or whatever. If you ever eat Mike and Ike sours, a lot of them look like that. They're in that shape, the bacillus shape. So we're really going to focus here on the intestines. We will have a future article or interview on the skin, things that we do to our skin that increase the chances of getting dermatitis or a fungus infection or even a yeast infection in the vagina that's caused by candida, which is a type of fungus. We're going to talk about that later, things that we can do to our skin. Today's really going to be more about the intestines. So we literally have about 3 trillion, as far as we know, more or less, bacteria that live in our intestines. 3 trillion. Now, if you were to put in an enteroscope or a camera into the intestines, of course, you would not see these bacteria because they're microscopic. And we do have scopes that either go up the anus into the colon, like a colonoscopy, that procedure, or we have a scope that goes down the mouth and endoscopy. But we don't have a tube that goes from mouth all the way to the back end, so to speak. We do have cameras. I'm sorry, we do have pills that people can swallow to see if they have any lesions, bleeding, and whatnot. But we don't have a scope. But definitely we know that bacteria exists down there. So the best way to look at it is that there's an ongoing battle going on in our intestines. On one side, you have the pathogenic or disease-causing bacteria. Depending on where you're at, this could be E. coli, for example. This could be Helicobacter pylori, which is the bacteria that causes ulcers in the stomach. So you have the bad guys. And then on the other side, we're going to have the good bacteria, which we call the probiotic bacteria. And they're going to be on the side of the immune system. So you have the immune system and your probiotic bacteria constantly struggling and fighting against the pathogenic bacteria. And we are exposed to pathogenic bacteria every day. And it's not like a question of you didn't wash your hands after you went to the bathroom. We are grabbing doorknobs and our phones and just everything all day. And how often do we put our hands to our mouth, for example? So it's not like you can live in a bubble, like that John Travolta movie, The Boy in the Bubble, back in the 70s. We can't do that. Now, some people are immunocompromised and need to really make a concerted effort not to be exposed to pathogenic bacteria. But the large majority of us are exposed to it every day and we're fine. A lot of the maladies that we get are because we're not, our immune system is either weakened or we don't have a preponderance or a stronger amount of the probiotic bacteria. So we want a good balance. What we really want is a lot more probiotic bacteria than pathogenic bacteria. So the best way to maintain this preponderance of good bacteria over bad bacteria, of course, is always going to be diet. So we want to eat a lot of prebiotic foods. Prebiotic foods are foods that naturally grow your probiotic bacteria. And we'll talk about that on another podcast. What are prebiotics? What foods are prebiotic? And how do we do that? But that's typically the easiest way, is just eat food that's naturally going to make your bacteria grow. Okay, so but unfortunately, the standard American diet of today, so full of grains and inflammatory foods like dairy and, of course, sugar, the industrial-grade omega-6 vegetable oils, all these have caused a seismic shift in most people's guts, resulting in the pendulum swing going toward the pathogenic side. And so now you have a lot of these GI disorders that you might have heard of, like leaky gut, Crohn's disease, colitis, celiac disease. Now, some of these are autoimmune in nature, meaning that the immune system attacks the body itself, like for the example of celiac disease, which is most commonly known because people with celiacs can't ingest anything with gluten. And gluten is most commonly, of course, seen in wheat, so flour. So think of all the food that we eat that has flour in it. Pretty much every middle aisle of the supermarket has flour in it. So these people can't eat it. And in the case of celiac, the body attacks the microvilli cells, the absorbing cells, to the point where it's like no man's land. It's a wasteland. So they have malabsorption problems in general. So even if they're not eating flour and they're eating, let's say, a paleo diet, they still have malabsorption problems because their cells have been scarred. And so they can't even absorb the good food. So lots of times with celiac people, they're very skinny and they're perhaps not that tall. I mean, there's always exceptions, but that's kind of the overall view. But anytime they do eat something with flour, they're major abdominal distress. Same for Crohn's disease, leaky gut. A lot of these, the common signs is that you're bloated, you have a lot of stinky flatulence, you might have some brain fog. These are all class examples of what we call dysbiosis. So microbiome is the kingdom of the bacteria down there. And dys means like abnormal or not normal or painful. So dysbiosis, like dysfunctional, would mean that there is an imbalance in your gut. So it's also sometimes called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or SIBO, which is a common term you hear nowadays. So if you have any of those symptoms and you just don't feel right, you might want to get tested by an MD or an ND, preferably somebody that's into integrative medicine and kind of has a holistic naturopathic view. But if you are suffering from these problems, I'm going to give you some possible recommendations of what you could do. But let's cover first the benefits of having a well-adjusted bowel. So in other words, having a preponderance of probiotic bacteria over the pathogenic bacteria. And a lot of these you won't even think about. So number one, you'll be less depressed. So studies have shown that serotonin, which is our mood neurotransmitter slash hormone, a lot of it is made in the gut. You know, we associate it with the brain. For example, the SSRIs, the most classic family of antidepressants, like Prozac and Paxil are part of it, stands for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So sometimes we associate depression with the brain, which is normal, or serotonin with the brain. But serotonin largely is made in the gut. And so there's been a lot of studies showing that there is a correlative link between depression and dysbiosis. So if you do have leaky gut or SIBO or something like that, you might have a greater chance of being depressed. And so in the naturopathic world, we're always looking for the underlying reason why you're suffering from an ailment, not just a symptom, which is the typical allopathic approach, right? Well, I have heartburn, or I have an irregular period. Okay, well, here's a script to treat the heartburn. Instead of asking, why do you have heartburn? You know, let's get to the root cause of it. So, for example, so if you have depression, if you go to your PCP, they're typically just going to write you an antidepressant and suggest that you meet with their partner who's a psychologist for talk therapy. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily bad, but what I would do first is exhaust all alternative treatments. And so look at the gut, look at the symptoms, the aforementioned symptoms that I mentioned, and perhaps increase your probiotic or prebiotic levels. So there are correlative links between depression and having dysbiosis. So having a strong microbiome might lead to greater moods, better moods. Number two, stronger immune system. Something like 70% of our immune system is in the gut. Sometimes they call it the second brain. And I mean, in some ways this makes sense because not only does the food break, not only does the digestive system break down food, but it's swallowing pathogenic bacteria. And so the stomach, which I like to call the fiery furnace of hell, its job is also to kill bacteria. So it makes sense that you're going to have a lot of the sentries, the white blood cells and whatnot, down in the gut because their job is to fight off any foodborne illnesses because since the beginning of time, when we've been ripping vegetables out of the dirt, we have been exposing ourselves to pathogenic bacteria as well. So it definitely makes sense. So there have been a lot of studies coming out as well that if you eat a lot of prebiotic and probiotic food, you're going to have a stronger immune system. You're going to grow and keep that immune system strong naturally. So One of the ways, of course, you could do that is eating a lot of foods with vitamin D or getting a lot of sunlight. That's a natural way. Glutathione, which is kind of our master immune system buddy, it resides in the gut, and we want to keep that number high. You know, it's a big antioxidant thing, and so we want to keep that high. Now, you can take pills for glutathione, but again, we want to try to do everything naturally. And ingesting low amounts of sugar helps too, because bacteria eats sugar. Like everybody else, bacteria is going to love sugar, nibbling on sugar. And this is one of the reasons that you see diabetics having problems recovering from ulcers, for example, because bacteria, you have a lot of blood. Your sugar in your blood is very high, right? That's kind of the definition of diabetes, in that the sugar can't be brought into the muscles and the organs for either some sort of insulin problem or you're not making it. And so your blood sugar is very high. And so bacteria, if you have a wound like on the skin, is going to be diving into the blood and just nibbling and just growing and growing and growing. So there's some studies also showing that kids that are born from C-section and not vaginal births have a weakened immune system, because the baby, when it's struggling to get through the vagina, inherits, so to speak, the bacteria that's already in the mother's vagina. And because of the vagina, the oral cavity, these are very full of bacteria. I wouldn't say that they're dirty organs, but they're not sterile like you would see in the brain, for example, or even the lungs. So the bacteria will crawl into the baby's mouth and through the anus, not to be, you know, a little vulgar, but it inhabits the baby's microbiome that inhabits their intestines. And so they have their own little resident microbiome, which is a good thing. Again, this is a good thing. So when you're born out of a C-section, you're taken straight out of the sterile amniotic sac out into the outside world. So you don't have the benefit of struggling through the vagina and being exposed to your mom's probiotic bacteria. So stronger immune system. So if you have a very high diet and probiotic or prebiotic food, you have a better chance of having a stronger immune system. And so you're going to be less likely to get sick, or perhaps develop some diseases. So again, there's that war in our body between the probiotic bacteria and our immune system on one side and pathogenic bacteria. So when we weaken our immune system, for example, by eating a lot of sugar or not getting enough sunlight or not sleeping well enough, it's going to weaken our immune system, and therefore we're more susceptible to one of those pathogenic bacteria getting us sick, or viruses. You know, viruses get us sick quite often. I mean, the flu is a virus, for example, the common cold and whatnot. Number three would be better overall digestive health. So when you have dysbiosis, you're going to have, or leaky gut syndrome, any of those things, you're going to have too many of the pathogenic bacteria in you. So you're going to have a lot of that bloating, diarrhea, cramping, fatigue, weight gain, and so forth. So when you flip that around and increase the probiotic bacteria, a lot of those symptoms are going to go away. You're less likely to have the diarrhea, or if, let's say, you have some constipation, and you definitely won't have that bloating that some people have. And I'm lactose intolerant, and I should have known better. I had some ice cream last night, and now I'm really feeling it, because I get that, not to be too graphic, of course, but you know, I get that bloating and that just feeling. So those are just a few reasons why you should be wanting to increase the microbiome, the bacteria, the good bacteria in your gut, why you should think about your microbiome. And there's other reasons, but I just wanted to go over some real quick ones because I don't want this podcast to go too long. So there's two ways to improve your microbiome, to make the good bacteria stronger than the bad bacteria. So one, as I mentioned, is eat probiotic foods, fermented foods, or to eat prebiotics. So today we're just going to focus on probiotic food. So when you're looking for probiotic food, you want to look for words on the labels that say active ingredients, it contains active cultures, or fermented, for example. The most common probiotic bacteria is going to be like lactobacillus and acidophilus. You might have heard of those bacteria. Those are the good guys. But there's other really good bacteria in fungus as well. So let's start. Food number one is Greek yogurt. This is perhaps the cheapest of all the probiotic bacterias. It depends on where you read, but there's about 40 million bacteria or CFUs in a typical cup of Greek yogurt. Now, 40 million sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. Can you imagine eating 40 million bacteria in a cup of Greek yogurt? But I mean, again, we have 3 trillion bacteria in the gut. So 40 billion is a drop in the bucket to 3 trillion. But nevertheless, Greek yogurt's very tasty and it's very cheap. You can buy Greek yogurt, a cup of it, for a dollar. So it's very cheap. And honestly, it's pretty low in kind of the things that can make dairy problematic. So I would recommend that you eat Greek yogurt. Now, if you do eat Greek yogurt, I would recommend that you eat unflavored Greek yogurt, because the flavored Greek yogurt, of course, brings a lot of sugar. If you look at a cup of Greek yogurt, it can have anywhere from, 15 to 25 grams of sugar. So when you buy the blueberry Greek yogurt or the raspberry or the honey, so buy plain, full fat, or at least 2%. A lot of the Greek yogurts are fat-free, so they're still in this paradigm that we don't want fat. We do want fat. We do want fat. Fat is satiating, and it makes food taste really good. Because when they take out the fat, it doesn't taste as good. So what do they have to do in? What do they have to do? They have to put in sugars and preservatives and all that garbage, those chemicals. So try to find at least 2%, if not full fat, unflavored yogurt. And then when you get the unflavored Greek yogurt, then you can chop up your raspberries, your blackberries. You could put in granola, cinnamon, which is very good for your health. You make it the way you want to make it. Also, try to buy Greek yogurt that doesn't have any of the bovine growth hormones. So look for no RBST or no RBGH, ideally. So if you buy organic, that it'll cover that. But just look for that too, because your local grocery store should make its own Greek yogurt now because it's so popular. So make sure it's Greek yogurt, because regular yogurt is not going to have that. So look on the back, look for contains active ingredients. Number 2 is kombucha. Kombucha is a drink that is an acquired taste. It is an acquired taste. Now, my 4-year-old daughter likes kombucha. She'll drink it every day. She will drink it every day. Now, my 6-year-old son, not so much. And I'll drink it, but I get a little tummy ache unless I take out the carbonation. So kombucha is black tea that's fermented. Now, you can go online and see easy ingredients or easy ways to make your own kombucha instead of buying the bottles, which are pretty expensive, to be honest. They're about maybe $3 to $5 for a glass bottle of kombucha. The name kombucha is interesting. Chai, it means Thai in Chinese, and there was a man, if I remember this story correctly, this is way back when the Chinese emperor was ill, and so this man named Kombu came to the court, and he offered him this drink. And it cured the emperor, and so they named this drink after him, kombucha. So it's fermented black tea, then they throw in some sugar and some fruit juices. So it kind of tastes like sweetened vinegar. So, but give it a try. You've probably heard of it. And the great thing about kombucha is, A, you can make it at home. You can make your own SCOBY, and it's not that hard. And secondly, it has a lot less sugar than soda. So if any of you are really hooked on soda still, the coca cancers, as we call them, you can wean off of them and go to kombucha, because a typical large bottle of kombucha, depending on which flavor you buy, could have anywhere from about 4 grams of sugar per serving to maybe 10. So ideally, you want to go on the lower end. But that's still at least a third of the sugar, at least a third, that's in a Coke bottle. So kombucha still is sweet. It comes in a variety of flavors. So definitely try it out. The third probiotic food or drink would be kefir. Kefir is like a fermented yogurt drink that comes from the Middle East or comes from Turkey. And you can find different types of kefir. I've even seen now kefir water. I don't know about that. I would really actually stick to the yogurt drink. Lifeway is a brand that makes a lot of kefir. And you can find different brands that make it, but it's essentially a fermented yogurt drink. And it's going to be the same issues with Greek yogurt. When you're looking at it, try to find something that's organic or doesn't have the growth hormones, contains active ingredients, and look at the sugar. Because, for example, Lifeway, which is the most commonly sold kefir, if you look on the back, it's 20 grams of sugar for a cup. So it is a lot of sugar, which I don't recommend, of course. We try to keep our sugar down. But kefir is a great drink, especially if you're wanting to increase the probiotics in your kids. I would probably say make them, you know, Greek yogurt bowls and throw in whatever they want. That's probably the better way. But kefir is an easy way to get kids to get some probiotics in their diet. Some other options would be sauerkraut and kimchi. Kimchi is fermented cabbage from Korea. Sauerkraut, it's cabbage as well. So when you're looking for sauerkraut, make sure it's the refrigerated variety. And again, look on the back for contains active ingredients or that it's fermented. And most probiotic foods, they will actually say, and I'm sorry, they'll actually list the actual bacteria and fungus that's in it. So typically the sauerkraut that's in the aisles will not be probiotic. They will not have the bacteria. Kimchi's great if you like the taste. Some people, it's an acquired taste. So dark chocolate typically has some probiotic bacteria, especially the higher end ones. Always opt for the higher end dark chocolates, 80, 85, 90%. Now dairy, milk used to be, before we pasteurized it and homogenized it, used to be, contain active cultures. If you drink it straight out of a cow, it used to have bacteria, but you know, Louis Pasteur, a couple, you know, people would die from the milk being bad or having a pathogenic strain in it. So now we pasteurize it, which means now we heat it up to a very high temperature. So that kills all the bacteria. So if you're wanting to look for dairy for probiotic sources, which again, there are problems with dairy, then try to find at a co-op or a local farmer's market, try to find milk that has not been pasteurized. Also, there's some cheeses that are probiotic in nature as well, like Edam and Cheddar, maybe Feta, some of these cheeses. But again, look for live cultures. Miso, if you like Japanese food, miso is a soup made from fermented rye and some beans. So that's got probiotic elements in it. Tempeh is another Asian dish that's got probiotics in it. It's got some soy in it. So soy is another issue, which we'll talk about later, but that's an alternative. And then the last one really you can cover are going to be the actual probiotic pills. Now, be careful with probiotic pills. A, you want to get the refrigerated probiotic pills. So if you go to a pharmacy and you walk down the aisles like Rite Aid, Walgreens, or wherever, CVS, they will have lactobacillus, acidophilus, all those in the aisles. Now, the bacteria stay fresher when you refrigerate them. So do not buy probiotic pills that are not refrigerated. So let's go to the organic aisle or wherever you're at Whole Foods, or as we like to call it, Whole Paycheck, because it's so expensive there. Go to the refrigerated probiotic pills. And then when you're there, you are just inundated with a large variety of probiotic pills. You know, these are for kids, these are for women, these are for old people, these are for men. I mean, they have the panoply of them. And this is really up to you, because probiotic pills can be very expensive. So if money is not an object, what I would do is opt for the one that has the most strands. So look on the back. So look to see which one has the most strands of bacteria and fungus, both of them. And go for probably that one. And look at, of course, look at the amount. What's the CFU, or how many billions of bacteria are there per pill? That's what I would probably recommend. Now, you can get Acidophilus and Lactobacillus for cheap, like $5 pills, but those typically are not going to be refrigerated. And as I mentioned, they're not the ideal probiotic pill. So if you're going to invest, probiotic pills are about $30 to $50, and maybe there might be 60 pills in there. So you're looking at spending that per month. So it is an investment. So what I would recommend, and I will have a podcast later on about this, is just eat a lot of prebiotic food, but also eat the Greek yogurt, which is the easiest way to get probiotic food in you. Just make an effort to put Greek yogurt into a smoothie. You know, it makes it really frothy, or just make yogurt bowls, or just find ways. So that's probably the easiest way, because kombucha and the other probiotic foods are either expensive or they're maybe a little too ethnic. And it's hard to buy them on a daily basis and be eating them. So the takeaway is it's extremely important to have a healthy microbiome. Again, we want to have the probiotic bacteria stronger than the pathogenic, the bad ones. It's extremely important. And so, and there's cases like there's a bacteria called C. diff, which is a major problem, Clostridium difficile, that you see in a hospital. So people will go into a hospital to have, I don't know, a surgery on their arm, and they contract this horrible bacteria which infests their intestines. And so they have a lot of diarrhea, and they get very sick. And the old way we used to treat C. diff is by giving them antibiotics. Well, this is another podcast in the future, the issues with antibiotics. But the antibiotics largely wouldn't work. So now what we do are fecal transplants. And the fecal transplants are incredible. They've done wonders for people who have C. diff and other dysbiosis issues. So essentially what they do is somebody donates their feces, and this is through a lab. Somebody with a normal microbiome donates their feces to the lab, and the lab will prepare it. And then what the hospitals will do is inject this normal, healthy feces into the person with C. diff. And so the healthy feces, which is laden with normal probiotic bacteria, will beat back the C. diff that has killed all the probiotic bacteria in the patient. So fecal transplant, there's also fecal pills too, poop pills, so to speak. These have been wonders for people with C. diff, but we don't want to get that far. The point is always going to be prevention. So my takeaways, now that I'm almost finished here, is try to eat a lot of Greek yogurt and the other aforementioned probiotic pills, and eat a lot of prebiotic food. And hint, tease, a lot of the prebiotic foods are, not surprisingly, going to be vegetables. So this is A. Gregory Luna. I thank you very much for listening to the inaugural podcast of NPE, or Naturopathic Earth. Hopefully you'll come back and listen to us again. Until then, take care, God bless, and eat well and take care of yourself.
Listening to Naturopathic Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com, follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.